Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah. That cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh, man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
That cat is high. Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. In the studio today, we have good friend of mine, James McKnight of Don Q Rum. James was here a few weeks ago, for the Tiki All-Stars show that we did for the great Tiki All-Stars night that Brian Miller hosts at Lani Kai here in New York City. And I'm very glad to have him back.
Nice. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great. You know, obviously, last time we saw each other was here at the show. Well, maybe. We probably saw each other. But it was very fitting that you working for Don Q Rum and being at the Tiki Night, there's a little continuity there, having you back on the show to talk about some rum, but also talk about you as a person. You're from Brooklyn.
Born and bred.
Bay Ridge, baby.
Real New Yorker.
Hell yeah. And you're definitely one of the bigger personalities and fixtures in our cocktail bartending scene and, you know, the spirits world, as it were. And, yeah, it's just really great to have you on the show. We're going to talk about some Don Q rum and stuff, but I don't really know that much about you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I've been in this business a little longer than I really am. I was a waiter in the 80s, very young, worked at the River Cafe, worked in the Seaport, and then I got out of the business. I never really bartended before, and I worked in the corporate. I worked for 9X, which is now Verizon, or some form of Verizon. 9X was the only telephone company, and then the government broke it up because they considered it a monopoly. But I worked in that category as a suit. And I was a corporate guy, and all I did was fire people. And they called me the angel of death in the company because if I came into an office, somebody knew they were getting fired, and I would work their job for 3 weeks till we found somebody else, and then I'd move on to the next place. And I worked under a guy named Dick Eagle, a really nice guy, even though he was a Celtic fan, and from Boston, and he was climbing up the ladder, but I really didn't like the job. And one day I was putting on my necktie and bumming out that I had to go to an office to fire somebody in Manhattan, downtown Manhattan, and one of the offices, and I see this guy on television, and I had worked in the business before, so I knew what bartending was, and I couldn't fathom that a bartender was on a Today Show mixing a cocktail, and it was called Flame of Love, I'll never forget it, and guy flamed an orange peel, and I lost all control of my senses.
And you can say you lost your shit.
I lost my shit. Yeah. And I said to my girlfriend at the time, I said, I'm going to quit my job, and I'm going to become a bartender. And she looked at me like I was out of my mind. And I did just that. I gave my two-week notice and lied and got a bartending job. And the guy that was on the Today Show was Dale DeGroff. And I credit him with actually me finding a profession I love, and I've been doing it now for about 13, 14 years, and I finally told him this story about maybe 3 months ago, and he said, I've known you for 10 years, why would you? I was like, I didn't want to be one of those geeks telling you how you got me started, but really, literally, I saw you on the show, and you looked like you were having so much fun, and had been coming from a restaurant background, I really wanted to get back into it. And I've never looked back. And, you know, I credit him with actually, if I hadn't seen him on the show, it'd be very interesting what path I would have taken. Yeah. And I'm really happy. I think the bartending community is great. They're family. They always rise to the occasion, whether you're high or low. And I have no regrets about quitting that job.
Excellent. You know, I think, you know, obviously on this show, we've definitely credited a lot of people have definitely credited Del DeGroff as being one of those guys who kind of opened the doors or opened their mind to the world of bartending as a profession. And I mean, you know as much as I do, you know, that he is definitely one of those guys who's an inspiration to all of us. Sure. And
that makes a great drink.
He makes a great drink.
He's actually, I think he's underrated now. As far as as a cocktailian, I think he's underrated. And he did one of the Tiki Mondays with Miller, and he probably maybe the best Hermerine daiquiri I've ever had.
I took a photo. You had on a... I was there that night with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I took a photo of the bar napkin that he wrote his spec on.
I have it. It's on my refrigerator.
I went back about a week later and looked at the spec, and really... This is the beautiful thing about that guy. Really, the spec isn't really too far off from what the classic spec is, but it's just there's something about having a drink from Del DeGroff that
it's an honor.
It's a total honor.
It's really an honor.
It tastes different.
You know? It just does, and it's funny because like you know, you younger kids, like I'm somewhere bridging the gap. Like I'm not as mature as Gary Regan and Dale. And maybe me and Wander are in the same ballpark. Not that I'm even comparing myself to him, but but I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. So it's really interesting to me. Like I remember Dale, like when I was a waiter. Like I knew who Dale was in the '80s and the '90s, and he was the only bartender I really knew by name. And I had gone to like the Rainbow Room and stuff, and we had gone specifically to have cocktails from him. And it's funny, 20 years later, you're kind of doing the same thing. And I don't really think anybody has actually hit that nail on the head like he has. And maybe it's because of the timing or whatever, but I don't think anybody else has really like grown to that kind of level where you would want to go see them. Like he's like a one of a kind person and a great guy.
Absolutely.
I mean, so giving and caring and really wants people to do well. And has always been that way, from what I know. And his wife is lovely, and
Jill's
the best. And they're just great people. And to consider him a friend is, to me, it sounds geeky, but it's a real honor to like be friends with him.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember going to on that note of you know the Hemingway daiquiri being like the best one you've ever had. I was at the Cornelia Street Cafe when Jill was premiering some of her artwork. And Dale was making drinks. He was making Corpse Reviver number 2. So I was there with Cabell Tomlinson and Brian Miller and a bunch of the Norwegian bartenders who have been guests on the show before.
Yeah.
Hello in Oslo.
I love Norway.
Yeah, absolutely. And so he was making Corpse Reviver number 2s. And he was flaming an orange twist on going back to the whole the flamed twist thing. And I have made Corpse Reviver number 2s a billion times, more than I can even count. And but something about that drink, even though it was pretty much the classic spec, flamed the twist, and we were sitting around drinking these drinks, thinking and talking to each other and saying, this is the best fucking drink I've ever had. And like I said, you know, like certain bartenders shake a different way or stir a different way. Sure. Or for different, you know, different amounts of time, and it was just one of the best drinks, you know, and he's very generous with his knowledge. You know, he will definitely sit down.
He is.
And also he was very generous that night at Tiki Monday because he made me and Tiki Adam these fucking zombies and the fish bowls.
I remember those.
And I remember I had one of those, and then I had a Hemingway daiquiri, and then I had a zombie. And I look over at Tiki Adam, and he's halfway through his punch bowl of a drink. But it, yeah, that's a different kind of generosity, I guess. What do you think about like as far as those technical aspects of bartending? What has changed over the last few years since you've been in it? I mean, obviously you've been in it longer than that. But what are some of the things you've seen that are very exciting?
I think the talent's gotten much better. I think there's a lot more talent, especially in New York, and not just from New York people, but people migrating here. Mm-hmm. I think there's a big San Fran influence here now, where people are coming to make their mark here. I think New York is a benchmark, and some people will disagree with me, but I think if you make it as a bartender slash mixologist here, the world is your oyster. And I think that's why people from San Fran, Chicago, Denver, Boston are coming down here to either learn stuff or actually bring something new to the game. But the level of talent, like I was talking to people that have been around, I mean, you know, I've won my share of competitions, and it's tough now. Like, you know, I used to be able to pick out who I needed to beat, or you know, out of 10 people, maybe I had 3 people that I was worried about, or I had them on my radar. And now you go to these competitions and you have 25 people that could win. Like, you know, and I don't think anybody comes under the radar anymore. I think everybody's on the radar now, and there's a lot of cool stuff going on. I mean, I know the molecular mixology is becoming a big deal in Manhattan again. Not sure where I stand on that.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. I definitely find it interesting. But there's so much talent out here now.
And you judge a lot of these competitions.
I've been judging it. Now I want to kind of go back into competition because I'm getting the hunger to go back in. And we're in a lucky business, man. Like, people are winning cash prizes, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, or flying to the Caribbean, or, you know... there's no other profession that you get that luxury.
Yeah. We were talking about Steve Schneider, who's been on the show a couple times. Sure. From EO, Employees Only. And, you know, he just went to, he's in Taiwan right now, or Thailand, sorry.
Thailand.
Teaching a conference on bartending to 300 bartenders. I mean, like, no one really, like, would think that would happen 10 years ago.
And we're in a depression, we're not in a recession, but, you know, the thing is, when people don't feel good about what's going on in their life, they drink more.
Yeah.
So we're in kind of a...
It's an old Napoleon quote. He says, I am going to misquote this, but I drink champagne in defeat to console myself, and I drink champagne in victory.
Yeah, that's the quote. Yeah. I mean, just...
Always drinking champagne.
we're in a business that's kind of... It's almost like the bar business and a funeral business. Like, they're never gonna go out of never gonna go out of business. So nice. We're in a good, you know, and we're a good community in New York, and I think we're really embraceable to other cities, and I think that's why people come here to live here and learn here. And I think a lot of people from outside of New York have brought a lot of talent and other aspects to the cocktail world that we haven't really seen. I think the San Francisco people are really...
They're
really talented.
They've definitely been up in another game.
You know, I think they actually, we needed someone to step up our game. And I think the people from San Fran are really making the New York people work a lot harder than...
Absolutely, because we didn't have a lot of challenges before, but now...
No, we're kind of the big bully.
This is the birthplace of the cocktail. So it's like, yeah, we have to be challenged every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, when you're judging a competition, what are some of the things that really stand out to you with the competitors? I mean, like, as far as like the cocktails, the ingredients, technique.
I mean, just technique. I think there are a lot of people. I want to start to do my technique better a little bit. I've seen some young people that really are, their technique is really solid. Also, just to be personable. I think personality goes a long way. I think it's the same when you go in. Listen, when you go into cocktail lounge, you know, cocktails are expensive now. They could run anywhere from $15 to $22, I've seen. You know, and when cocktails are that expensive, people just don't want to drink. They want an experience. And I think the people that do really well in cocktail competitions are people that can make a drink, but they give you some type of an experience where you remember them. And it could be personality or a story or history of the spirits that they're using for the cocktail. But to me, judging-wise, like, if you just pour me a drink, even if it's delicious...
Even if it's super creative, like with...
Unless you have some kind of tale to tell me or some semblance of why you did this drink and smiling... I probably won't judge you that great, you know?
Yeah. I always, like, in being a bartender, and nowadays it's definitely, like, all of our games have to be upped, you know? And I've always said that being a bartender is not just one role. You have to be a chef, a waiter. You have to be a manager, a bouncer, a host, most of all.
Sure.
And that's where that definitely comes into play.
Well, I think what happened was for a couple of years here, the hospitality part of the bartending job got lost in translation. And I think that's why you see a lot more places opening up that really aren't speakeasy places. They're not really cocktailing places, but they have a lot more to offer their food or beers or, you know, some semblance of kind of casual feel. And I think that's the way New York is kind of going. I think that a lot of the problems with the cocktail places was that you went in order to drink and your bartender never looked at you.
Right.
Never acknowledged you, made the drink, put it in front of you, and it was no kind of human relation. I think they're getting better at that, but I think places that are more hospitality-driven are doing really, really, really well. I think people want that. You know, that's an aspect of in the food and drink service that was missing for about 10 years, and I think it's come back in a big way because people are realizing that, you know, there's a lot of places for people to go, and people want to be welcome to a place. And if you come in, you have a great time. It's not really about how great the drink was, or how, but the whole night. You know, what you remember, like, you know, whether the bartender was really nice to you, or the food was really good, or your service was good, or people just made you feel comfortable. I think that's what people are really looking for these days.
Absolutely, we're not here to sell drinks and get people drunk. We're here to
Sell an experience
no and doubt about make it. People happy and make people feel welcome. And when we get back from this break, I can't wait to get a little bit more comfortable with some of the Don Q rum that you read.
So Don Q,
we'll be back in just a minute.
Maybe my favorite rum.
Absolutely. When we get back, we will try that out and talk more about Don Q rum.
Sure, please.
All right, back in a moment.
Thanks.
Was sponsored by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Summertime is not the only time when barbecue is welcome. At S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, Sam Edwards has been working his magic on ribs, briskets, pit-cooked pulled pork, and much, much more. Add a few of their sides and the party is complete. Entertaining has never been so easy. To order, go to virginiatraditions.com.
And we are back.
Cool. Are we ready to drink some Don Q?
I think so.
Cool.
You've been listening to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte, and in the studio today we have my good buddy James Manine from Don Q Rum and from Brooklyn, New York.
Great to be here.
And it's a great day to be here in Brooklyn, New York. It's sunny, feels like the first day of spring, and what better occasion to drink some rum?
No doubt about it. There's always never not a time to drink rum.
That's true. So tell us about your what you're doing with Don Q Rum. You've been working with them for a few years now, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a real family aspect about that company that I find really heartwarming. And even though I've been approached by other companies, I tend to go back to Don Q just because it's such a family-oriented business, and they do such a great job. But everybody has a piece to the puzzle in that company, and the rum is really good. I mean, the Añejo, which is aged 3 years in white American oak, which we're about to drink right now, ladies and gentlemen. cheers. It's just such a great format of rums, like what they have from the silver, the crystal, down to the Gran Añejo, which I can say, even though I do things for other rum companies, the Gran Añejo is my favorite rum.
Cool.
Hands down. I think it's something really special. It's aged 3 to 12 years, and people are not aging rums 12 years, and they take the time and dedication to let the rum sit there and create a really balance of great mellowness and great fruitness and great complexity, and just the company itself is just they're friends, you know. Like,
yeah.
I've bridged a bond with those people that I really have never experienced with another company. You know, we've both worked for companies, and I don't consider them a company. I consider them family. You know, and they really get the job done. You've seen Darren Tales and.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff like that. No, nobody does it better than Don Q downtown.
I've been to some pretty sweet Don Q parties.
I mean, Don Q just, they're very focused, but at the same time, they like to have a good time. And it's very rare in a company that you can actually conceive both and do a good job. And they are definitely the blueprint for how it's done. And the spirits have no limit. I mean, they're just getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, the Sorales family is... It's so nice. I mean, we went to their house down in Puerto Rico 2 years ago, and they were so nice to us, and so giving, and it was just a great experience to be down in Puerto Rico with them and see their distillery is state of the art. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, top notch from head to tails, and I was really surprised. You know, I've been to distilleries in Scotland that don't even hold a candle to Don Q.
And you're starting to see a lot more of Don Q around a lot of the cocktail bars. Just from having this Añejo, I mean, it's so much lighter than I remember it being. You know, it's like for an Añejo, it's like, it's really, really smooth.
It's just so good, and it plays well in cocktails. I actually think that the Añejo is the best rum, hands down. And I'm not being a Don Q guy, because you know me, like I work for other brands, but I tell them, like, the Añejo, as far as cocktails go, is probably my favorite rum. It plays really well. No, and everybody always thinks it's very, they always think it's very hard. It's not. It's very soft.
Yeah.
You know, it's 3 years of white American oak. It's very soft feel. It doesn't over, like if you do a cocktail with it, it doesn't really overwhelm it. It kind of blends in really well with stuff, but you can still taste the rum there. You know, makes maybe the greatest daiquiri I've ever had, which I wish we had lime juice.
I was just thinking that, too.
I would totally make
it. Especially on a day like today, man. Could totally rock
this day. This day calls for a daiquiri.
Jack, our producer, is looking through the window saying, yeah, please.
Yeah, sure.
Give me one.
I wish. Come on, Jack. Lime juice and sugar, man. I'll shake it right now. I'll shake on air.
It wouldn't be the first time.
It wouldn't be the first time. But no, they're just very dear to my heart, and they always really take very good care of me. And it was a relationship that came out of kind of nowhere and has lasted for 6 years. And I'm really, really happy that I'm part of their family.
Well, me too. Especially because you brought this along today. And you brought something special today as well.
I brought the Gran Añejo, which is rums aged 3 to 12 years. And a lot of the juice in there is 12 years old. They were the first ones to really kind of think about aging rum like that. And I think it is, hands down, my favorite rum.
Is it so? You said it's 3 to 12. I mean, is it blended or is it a?
It's a blend. Solera? It's a blend, but a lot of it is 12. Like, it's not 5% is 12. A lot of it is 12. Beautiful, beautiful rum for cigars.
Yeah, I mean,
or any type of. Actually, it goes really well with steak or really fatty fish, like swordfish, shark, stuff like that. But
the nose is amazing.
I mean, it's just an amazing product. I mean. I'm so blessed to be, like, you know,
Wow.
I'm so blessed to like be part of this.
Oh, wait. Here's Jack, our producer. Is that simple syrup?
Yeah.
Oh, well, cool. We'll do a room temperature.
You have a shaker? Do you have a shaker?
Yeah.
All right. Should I do a Grand Anejo daiquiri?
Maybe if you want to ball out, then we can do that, man. Yeah.
Well, we'll do the Anejo, which really actually makes the best daiquiri, I think.
Nice.
I wouldn't do the Grand Anejo. It's just good on its own.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to mess this flavor.
Great sipping.
Of course, you know.
I know you know Esteban Adonez.
We can start making it rain in here.
You know Esteban Adonez.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Good friend of mine does a
sweet.
Great.
Thanks, Jack.
Great job with Don Q. I don't even think he gets the props he should get in our world. And he is great. And also, I'll tell you, nobody batches like Esteban. Me and Esteban, when we do batchings, like with Don Q, we'll do like events to like 600 people. And we just get it done, man. Guy's a real talent. You got to have him on the show one of these days.
Absolutely. You know, speaking of that, you know, I feel like one of the first, I'd met you before, but one of the first times I actually like talked to you and hung out with you was at the very first Manhattan Cocktail Classic, and you were working for Don Q. Maybe it was the second one, but I think it was the first one. And I just remember having way too many daiquiris in that room.
I was making daiquiris, in that room, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the only air-conditioned room in there.
I know. That's why I hung out there the entire time.
Us and Diageo.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, let's talk about... We don't have a whole lot of time left on the show, but let's talk about the daiquiri. Okay. I'm going to let you start.
That's the Brian Miller shake. I know it's kind of weak.
No, because you didn't cross your arms. You didn't have two shakers. You didn't dance around.
I didn't cross my arms.
But the daiquiri, let's just talk about this for a second. A lot of people, when they think about daiquiris, they think about some frozen drink with like strawberries or banana or mango.
Sure, the daiquiri is kind of a lost drink.
But it's making a big comeback.
It's trying to. You know, I think rum is the next breakout spirit. And people in New York will tell me I'm out of my mind. But I really think that rum's going to break through in a big way in the next 2 to 3 years, especially with global warming, because we're just... I mean, tomorrow's supposed to be 70 degrees tomorrow. 69 degrees.
Yeah.
And I think as far as that goes, you know, people think rum is kind of a secondary spirit category, and they're so out of their minds with that. I just think it hasn't hit in New York yet. I think it will. I just think it needs a little bit more time and education. You know, I think people were really kind of... It's just like tequila. Tequila was a spirit 5 years ago and nobody drank. And now, you know, because of Patron, they made a market for it. And it's a big market. Thank you. Yeah. We are drinking a daiquiri right now, by the way.
That's true.
Cheers.
And cheers to you, brother.
I think rum is the next one. I think it was tequila first, and then I think the next one will be rum. And I think Don Q is going to be a big part of that because their flavor profiles are everywhere, from flavored rums to high-end rums to medium rums to rums you can put in your well. They're really the only company that's really covered all aspects of it. I think it was really smart. There's not really a profile that Don Q is not really in the market for. And I really do think that rum is going to hit very, very big in the next couple of years. I mean, do you agree with me? Or
I absolutely do. I mean, especially with a lot of people don't understand the history, and it's just because it's been kind of lost to time. But the history of rum, I mean, it was a big part in actually the beginning of the United States.
Well, we made rum. That's what we made here.
Yeah.
I can't believe nobody's not made a New York rum. Like me and Brian Miller.
Besides, like Tuttletown.
Yeah. Like me and Brian. Well, yeah, but me and Brian Miller have talked about, like, he's always like, oh, I don't like the spice rums out. And I'm like, well, let's make one. And I think in another year, Alan Katz might actually let us two idiots make a spice rum. And I want to make an overproof spice rum. But have you had the Blackbeard?
That isn't. Yeah.
Blackbeard's good.
Oh, yeah. Very much.
Blackbeard's really good. but rum basically made the country. You know, when we won the Revolutionary War, we owed $55 million to the Spanish and the French. And we were really worried because we had lost so many lives. We were very weak. And Washington and Jefferson were really afraid that because the Spanish and the French, we owed them so much money, we owed them $55 million, which now would be like probably $55 billion. they were trying to figure out, they were like, well, if we don't pay them back, they're gonna invade us, and we don't really have enough troops to really like hold off both of them. So how do we pay it back? And Jefferson was like, well, I have the second biggest distillery in the country, and you have the biggest distillery in the country. He's like, so let's just tax rum, and we'll pay them back. And actually, that was the first form of tax in the United States.
Yep. Okay.
And we paid it back in 10 years, which is pretty incredible because that was a lot of money then.
Yeah.
But liquor was the first taxable item in the United States.
We also started our own Civil War with that, like before the Civil War, the whiskey rebellion too.
Sure.
Right. But you know what? We paid off that debt. I wish we could do that today.
I wish we could do that today. But it was pretty interesting, you know. And the thing was that they made money because they had the two biggest distilleries. They probably had the only two distilleries.
If you came to my bar and put a tax on Fernet Branca, we could pay this shit off in a day.
I don't know. I like Fernet Branca, but I don't know if I'm allowed a bourgeois pig.
That's a whole other show, man.
How's the daiquiri?
It's great, man. Right. This is actually kind of how I like it. I like it more on the tar side. Jack's looking in here. He's wanting one.
Did I not give you one, Jack? I'm sorry. There's more.
There's more. There's more in the show.
Yeah, I don't like sweet. I like tart. If you're going to use lime juice, make it tart.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's what it's there for.
This is how Hemingway would drink it.
Absolutely. Well, he was diabetic.
Yeah. It was like light. Essence the Hemingway daiquiri. That's, you know,
mm-hmm.
Very light on the sugar. Don't kill me.
James, I'm really sad to say that we are at the end of the show.
It was great being here. I appreciate it.
It was great having you here, man. You have to come back sometime.
We'll
continue our conversation about the taxing of our cocktails to pay off our national debt.
No doubt about it. I wish we could do it now. But,
yeah. But also, thank you so much for bringing the Don Q rum in, the Añejo and the Gran Añejo.
Listen, the Gran Añejo and the Añejo, two of the finest rums you'll ever taste. And if you haven't tasted it, this is not a plug. You need to taste it because they're fantastic.
I will definitely vouch for that. Where are you up to nowadays? Do you have anything coming up?
Well, I'm working at The Crown with Ben Scorer and Kyle Ford. Mm-hmm. And then just doing some gigs with companies, doing stuff like that, getting ready for Tales, going to Las Vegas next week for the bar and nightclub show for 2 days.
Oh, yeah.
Go hang out with Mr. Tobin Ellis.
Right.
Cool. Get my drink on. I'm literally going out there for about 42 hours and coming back because I'm in the Metropolitan Opera Cocktail Competition, so I have to be back by Wednesday.
Wow.
Yeah. It should be pretty fun.
Gonna hit it and quit it.
I'm gonna hit it and quit it.
Yeah. All right, man. It was so great having you. Thanks for bringing the rum.
Thank you.
We're gonna have to sign off and give Jack one of these daiquiris.
We definitely will. I'm gonna make one right now.
You gotta come back sometime. This is number two for you.
Anytime.
All right, man. Great having you here.
Thanks, David.
And we'll check in with you next week on Speakeasy, where my guest will be the infamous Tony Canigliaro and Rhea Soler. See you then. Cheers. It gets higher than a
kite. Now when you see him stumbling. Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. Man, I wouldn't lie. The cat's higher than a kite. Boys, he's high. Just look at them two black eyes. You know I wouldn't lie. He's higher than the sky. When you see him tipping round and round the block, talking, know that cat is very beat. Clean down to his
his socks. That cat is high. Boys, I wouldn't lie. Oh my, oh my.